It goes without saying, but the death of a loved one always comes as a shock. But when someone you love chooses to end their own life, that anguish is intensified. You are left with a lifetime of questions, grief, guilt, loss, maybe even shame. Suicide carries a huge social stigma. Family and friends who are in shock and in mourning feel maybe that they can't even speak the truth. Scott Chisholm is hoping his new project will break through that wall of silence. He is a firefighter in Thunder Bay, and he's also a photographer. 28 years ago, his father, Robert, killed himself. Now he is putting together a book called Collateral Damage, Images of Those Left Behind by Suicide. Just before the 1 o'clock news, we heard from Olympic swimmer Alex Bauman about some of his memories of his older brother. And we are opening up the telephone lines to you in this hour. Why is it important that we talk about suicide? The number to reach us toll-free is 1-888-817-8995. That number, wherever you're listening, 1-888-817-8995. Have you been left behind? Is there a moment along the way when you decided, that's it? When someone asks, I'm just going to say what happened. Maybe, on the other hand, it's more of a situation where it's still taboo, the unspeakable around your home. Maybe dealing with suicide is even part of your job as a healthcare professional or an emergency worker. You can reach us at 1-888-817-8995. And before we begin, we do want to remind you that our guest is not a counselor. If you know someone who is having suicidal thoughts, please contact your doctor or a local chapter of the Canadian Mental Health Association. We're asking you, why is it important to talk about suicide? And we are focusing on those left behind. I'd like to welcome Scott Chisholm to our program. He is joining us from our studio in Thunder Bay. Good afternoon.
Hi, Rita.
Let's start with your dad. Tell us a bit about him.
Oh, my dad. Like you said in the introduction, in 1982, my father took his own life, and I was 16 years old. It was a very difficult time. There's five kids in the family, mm-hmm. including myself, and it really did change us forever, and change in a way that it created so much confusion, especially as an adolescent at the time. And I guess perhaps along the way, I thought it would get easier, get better, or the questions would diminish somehow. But they still remain. Why?
Well, the why never goes away then.
No.
And can you walk us through a bit of the evolution? You were 16 when it happened. Tell us what it felt like then.
Thinking back, and again, it's going back a long time. And although I say it was a long time, it feels like yesterday. Mm. I remember I was at a high school basketball tournament, and when we were told it was a sense of anger, it was a sense of disbelief. There must be a mistake. It couldn't have happened. But at the same time, my father had been having some mental health issues with depression and alcoholism. So although shocked and in really a difficult place, I did believe it right away. It wasn't a question of total disbelief. You just want it to go away. Hmm. I remember wanting to, it was early in the morning that we learned about it, or that I learned about it. And I remember wanting to go to bed, hoping that I'd wake up and realize it was a bad dream. But that never came.
Can you give us an idea of like how you talked about this? I mean, I don't know, did everybody know in your circle of friends and family? Was it pretty open?
Well, certainly everybody knew. I grew up in a small town in Northern Ontario, so mm-hmm. there's no doubt that everybody knew. And like I say, there was no doubt that everybody knew, but there wasn't a lot of talk about it. Once I did get home, there's the initial grief of it all. Like I say, my siblings, ironically, and myself were all out of town at the time, so we all had this time lapse coming back to town. And I remember my journey back was in a police cruiser that was shuttled between three different little towns. And I remember the transition from between the second and the last car, and it hit me because I knew the police officer. I knew I was going home. And that part was became very, very real. I remember that point, and I remember pulling up in the driveway, and the driveway was full of cars, and people were there. And although I knew that there was a lot of people around, I don't remember the exact faces, and but it was so confusing for everybody. I remember my mother just how difficult it was to try to talk about it, and it was just a very, very confusing time.
Did it change over the years? I mean, how did his suicide affect the various members of your family?
Well, it affected us all, I believe, in completely different ways. And for a big part, I can't speak for everybody else. Even in my own family, as I've seen them grow throughout their adult lives, it's so different for every survivor of suicide, and a lot of those that I've talked to so far. It's so different and so individual. But we weren't able to truly talk about it. There was something, whether it was socially or whether we hid and wanted to be protected, and by not talking about it, perhaps it makes it easier. But we all, including myself, had very similar questions.
Yeah, and what did you say? You were a young man, and she's, I don't know, you go to school and say, oh, yeah, what, tell me about your family. Well, my dad died. Like, how do you approach that when you're 17, 18, 20 years old? Because inevitably then they'll say, oh, what happened?
Well, for me, it was a little different, and because I was 16 at the time, in grade 12, going away to college in the fall, and I had actually at that time been accepted into a criminology program in Calgary. So I was ready to leave anyway. So the transition time, I was leaving, and when I did, in a couple months afterwards, I had been in Calgary to do an interview for the program to get in, and I spoke about my father's death and how he died. And in that program, I was surrounded by sociologists, psychologists, and what I didn't realize right away, and I was accepted during that interview. But when I got to school, and I look back on this and see it, is that all my teachers, all my profs, got me talking. They weren't afraid to talk about it. It was a topic that I wrote about because it was part of a project. Mm-hmm. And when I look back on it, people like that, that wasn't just part of the curriculum. They actually went out of their way to take care of me. And although I've never been in any therapy, I've been surrounded by a lot of people who have actually been quite therapeutical for me.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, when you talk about it now, is it common for people then to disclose to you?
No. Even so, ironically, a number of years ago, I mean, personally, I've never had a hard time telling people about it. And although I say that, I've gone through my life of trying to avoid it as well. At one time, I was roommates with two other men who had lost close family members to suicide, and we never talked about it while we were roommates. And only recently, in the last couple of weeks, because of this project, I've had to let them know that it's going on, that we've had discussions. And one of those was very, very powerful for me, especially tied to the project, is he had said after about 15 minutes of talking about it, and he was 10 at the time and his brother was 16, he said, this is the longest I've ever talked to anybody about this, and it was only 15 minutes of a conversation.
And as we're mentioning, if it happens, you absolutely never forget, and it stays with you your entire life. We will get to the phones in just a moment. Our question is, why is it important to talk about suicide? We're focusing on those left behind. I'm saying that because a lot of it seems to me, Scott Chisholm, that if we do talk about it, it's about prevention, but we don't somehow deal with the survivors.
I think it's ironic about this book and this project is that the purpose of the book, I believe, is about lessening the stigma and creating a dialogue. And I've been asked many times, is it about prevention? And ironically, that's not the intent, because I know nothing about that. I know who I am and how I feel about a survivorship, mm-hmm. and about being a survivor. But before that, I don't really have any knowledge of that. But at the same time, when I say that, I really do believe by talking about this, that there's a great, great potential for a preventative aspect of it.
Sure. Well, we understand a little bit more, too. Scott Chisholm, just really briefly, and then we'll get to the call. Tell us just about Collateral Damage. This is a photo essay book that you're putting together?
Essentially, that's it. I've had this idea for about probably 10 or 12 years. What I was finding is that that with suicide, I was always left in the dark. People needed the conversation. If I mentioned suicide, it would end the conversation. If I mentioned, or if somebody was having a discussion, perhaps on suicide, if I mentioned my father's death by suicide, it would end it right away and people would walk away. Hmm. And what I really wanted to do is by putting my face to it, I thought it adds almost a level of responsibility to it, that it's somebody. This isn't just something that happens, like you stated in the obituaries, it's just a death and it goes away. Well, no, that's not the case. I'm still here. So it's really here. So I want to put a face to it, and the feedback that I'd been getting is that people would see it as courageous, putting my face forward. And I thought, no, this is just normal. This is who I am. It shouldn't take courage to be who I am. And so it really came out that I thought putting faces to those loved ones, those who have lost loved ones to suicide, would be important. And when I originally thought about it, I wanted, you know, maybe do 20 books or so and for those involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start taking our callers. We are asking, why is it important to talk about suicide? We're going to start in Georgian Bay. One of our first callers is Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for calling us. Tell us about your reflections on this topic.
Well, it's... This touched our lives with the death of our 16-year-old son, and he took his own life now 10 years ago in October.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how do you cope with this? I can only say that from our perspective, and I speak for my family, my wife and I, that the choice of use of choosing, that word choosing to take your own life, is something that I just can't understand. And I've reconciled myself to the fact that this is resting based on mental illness. And an illness like anything else, some is so serious that it kills you.
Mm.
So with the basis of suicide, it is a death as a result of an illness. Some is detected and treated, and those that are undetected, some people die of it.
And Paul, this aspect of the secrecy around it, stigma, did you ever feel that, or do you feel that?
I came out, if that's the right word, but certainly my wife and I and our family felt that it was really important to recognize that the illness and the problem, the stigma of mental illness, is something that we have to address all around, of which some, the outcome is mortality or death.
Was it immediate, or is it something that your family had to sort of come to?
You know, with all of the support we got from our community, George died in Edmonton, it was just overwhelming. And he was a senior in high school with all of the greatest things, good looking and a wonderful lad with great prospects. And it's just unfathomable as to how this could happen. So it's, you know, the question of why. Well, there's just no answering. There is no answer to those questions. The only way that we can see it is that George died of an illness like any other. Our ability to treat that illness and face up to mental illness and the broad prospects and the weight that it has on our society is something that we should address, because the outcome of some of those illnesses is death.
Scott Chisholm, do you want to pick up on something that Paul has said?
Oh, yeah. I think, Paul, I like your line, came out. It's very healthy. I think it's some. I mean, Paul speaks to it. I think although this project is about suicide, I think it's exactly the same about mental health. The stigma and the dialogue, there needs to be more there about mental health, and people need to be willing to accept it and speak about it. And I think it's one and the same issue. I think whether we call it suicide issues or mental health issues, it's the same stigma and the same thing that people don't want to talk about.
Let's go to another caller. Simone is on the line. Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling from Angus, Ontario.
Okay, so why is it important, do you think, to talk about suicide?
Because I lost my mother to suicide just before my 18th birthday, and the tremendous amount of anger that's left behind, and the tremendous amount of guilt. Could have I done something different? Mm-hmm. Could I have called more often? Could have I wrote more letters? And that's a really hard thing to deal with as a child, because you carry that around with you, and I still do at the age of 32.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you could be open about it when you were 18, or even now, and really talk about it?
I'm more open about it now as an adult, because I'm fighting mental illness myself. And I've stared down that dark tunnel in which suicide I thought was my only option. So I have opened up, and my friends are very have been very supportive. I've actually turned to them and had them administer my medications so I wouldn't overdose.
Hmm. But you're saying when you were a teenager, you felt pretty cut off and pretty alone then when it happened when you were 18.
Very much so. Hmm. Just the anger that was involved. I didn't know who to turn to. My whole family are medical professionals, doctors and nurses. And so there's the anger of why couldn't I fix her? What did I miss? So on and so forth.
Scott, do you relate to some of what Simone is talking about?
Oh, very much so. I mean, talking about what could we have done and what should we have done and just all those questions. And I think what Simone was talking about with the dialogue she has with her close friends is it really is needed. And when it's not there, that stigma almost takes us over. And even for Simone dealing with her own mental health issues, having the courage to one deal with those and talk about it allows her friends the courage to help her with it. And I think it's so important.
I wonder just your perspective on something that I'll say this as someone who works in a media organization. I mentioned this in one of the segments leading up to this. We're told we have rules. We don't report on suicides. I think the conventional thinking is that if we say and report on it, somehow we encourage more of it. So there's a real silence about it, even from a media perspective. When I was a reporter who did police checks. I mean, it happens in communities all the time. What are your reflections? I mean, should we be talking about it more as a reporting of, or how do we negotiate the silence around this?
Well, I think that blanket of silence, and I think when it comes to media, it's a little bit different, and I think it's a difficult issue to challenge there. But if we go to the step, say, my perspective as a paramedic and as a firefighter and mm-hmm. dealing with these all the time, we should be dealing with that. We should have that dialogue. We should be able to deal with it. And I don't see it happening there either. When I look at the same situation that happened to me 27 years ago, happening today, I don't see that we've come any further. I don't see any immediate care for that family sitting in the kitchen whose life has just been completely torn apart.
Mm-hmm.
The emergency services will clean up, will do their jobs, and probably offer services that are available in the community and go away.
And then it's done.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's an interesting observation. As a paramedic, how many suicides a year are you dealing with? Do you see even in Thunder Bay?
Well, right now I'm a firefighter, so okay. It's been about 17 years since I was a paramedic full time. But, it's on a regular basis. It's frequent.
Okay.
And I mean, the same. I don't know the numbers.
Okay. As I was saying, it really is just part of the job. We are asking you today to join our conversation. Why is it important to talk about suicide? 1-888-817-8995. Let's go to Joanne next. Joanne, where are you calling us from?
I'm calling from Toronto.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I lost my dear, wonderful son, Liam, to suicide 8 weeks ago. He was 23 years old. And I agree with Scott in that the services aren't, well, I don't think they're there for the suicide victim, ahead of the suicide. He struggled to find help. And I think definitely for those that are left behind, there's a real a disconnect with services. I'm talking about it all the time because I think, and I have people coming to me all the time with stories. People do want to talk about it.
Mm. Well, Joanne, first of all, we're sorry to hear, obviously, about your son. This is obviously very fresh for you.
Yes.
Why is it something, then, that you are talking about, calling even a radio station to talk about? And we're hearing, again, so many people still being so quiet about suicides.
Well, I think what Scott is doing is absolutely amazing. To show the faces of those that are left behind is just such a wonderful, wonderful idea. And I hope he will share on how we can get in touch with him at the end of the program. And I missed the other part of your question.
Of why for you it's something that you don't want to hide. You want it to be very clear what happened, that you don't want it to be a secret what you're
saying. For prevention, so that people don't have to go through what my family is going through right now. It's a living hell for us. It's very complex, very confusing, so many feelings, so much anger and frustration and guilt. And if I could prevent even one family from going through this, I would do whatever it took to do that.
Are you getting any kind of special assistance for your family?
I'm waiting to get into a program right now through the City of Toronto, but unfortunately there's a waiting list, and it's been about 4 weeks since I contacted them. I'm hoping soon, and I have two younger children. They're 15 and 20, and I'm trying to find a psychologist for them so they can get their feelings out as well.
Are they talking about it?
Not as much as I'd like them to.
Scott,
I'm sorry?
Well, it's interesting, Joanne, and I have to commend you on your bravery of calling, and I'm so sorry for your loss. It's interesting you talk about a wait list. A wait list to see somebody to talk about, you know, your family's loss to suicide. You know, we've heard a lot over the last many years in healthcare about wait lists. I've not heard it once about suicide or mental health, and it needs to be there. And I think often it's mental health is treated differently, and certainly that's where suicide is. And if we treated it like a broken arm, I've said if the people sitting in the kitchen all had broken arms, we'd assess them, treat them, bring them to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. But we don't necessarily do that in the case of suicide. Joanne, thank you for your call. You take care. And I think before we break, do you want to give our listeners a little bit more of an idea of where they can get more information? We'll continue with phone calls in a few minutes, but where they can find out about your book?
Yes, right away. We've got a website. It's leftbehindbysuicide.org, or they can phone area code 807-768-5217.
Our guest is Scott Chisholm. He is a firefighter in Thunder Bay. He's also been a paramedic, and as you have been hearing, he's had a personal experience losing his own father to suicide. His book is called Collateral Damage, Images of Those Left Behind by Suicide. It is a work in progress at this point, but we are opening up the phone lines to hear your stories too, and the question we're asking is, why is it important to talk about suicide? The number again, 1-888-817-8995. We'll get back to the phone in 90 seconds.
It's 1:30 and 23 degrees in Ottawa. I'm Lawrence Wall with the latest headlines from the CBC Ottawa Newsroom. Police in Gatineau say a baby has died accidentally at a home daycare. The 10-month-old child choked to death. Police are not releasing any more details. The daycare is located in the Hull sector of Gatineau. The Conference Board is naming the city of Windsor as ground zero of the economic recession. The Ottawa-based think tank says the slump is punishing small and medium-sized towns across the country, but it says none so much as Windsor. That city is expected to see its economy shrink 5.6% this year. And police in Markham first thought someone had staged a random carjacking with a baby still inside the car seat. Now it turns out to be a dispute between the parents. The car was reported stolen in Markham from a Costco store parking lot this morning. The baby is now back with its father. More news at 2 o'clock. Here's the weather for Ottawa. Sunny today, a mix of sun and cloud. After that, high of 25, very high UV index. Clearing tonight, low of 13. For Wednesday, a mix of sun and cloud, high of 26. Thursday, cloudy with chance of showers and a high of 22. Right now in Ottawa, mostly cloudy, 23, wind southwest at 8, humidity 56%. Mostly cloudy, 23 degrees.
Welcome back to Ontario Today. I'm Rita Chelli. They are those left behind. And our guest says we have to break the taboo about suicide, talk more openly about it, explore questions like how do you stay in your home? What sense can you make of a note perhaps left behind? Scott Chisholm is in our Thunder Bay studio, 1-888-817-8995. I wonder, do you have some thoughts on how people, you know, or how you have seen people negotiate some of those aspects? You know, if there is a note, what sense to make of it? How to find answers when there aren't any?
Well, I think it's one of those things that sets the how we heal, how we don't heal, and often it'll seem like it answers questions, but I think it leaves a lot more questions.
Right, because you can never ask again.
No, and, yeah. And whatever word is written, you'll question the word. You'll question, you know, and it brings you back to the why. And so, although my father never left a note, there's photographs around of us, and there's no question in my mind about his love for me and his dedication to his family, and that he truly believed he was a burden, and he would be doing better for us by choosing suicide.
Mm. Did you wish at some point that he had left something, like a note? Did you go through a phase where you wished that there was something written on paper even?
Not for me. I don't think words would be able to do it. My memories of my father are so real, and I know what they are. I know what that relationship was. I know the man who my father was, and that. That's what it's about for me.
Okay, let's take some other callers. Anne's on the line with us in Brampton. Hi, Anne.
Hi there, how are you?
We're doing okay. Tell us about your experience.
I lost a younger brother 2 years ago to suicide, and it was quite traumatic for the whole family. I think your guest is right. One of the big issues that we don't deal with is mental illness and mental health problems that people have. My family has not wanted to discuss publicly how he died, so they came up with an explanation for the family and friends. For me, I'm not ashamed of how he died. I think he made a decision that he thought was right for him. I don't agree with his decision, but he thought it was the right thing for him to do. And for my parents, because of the religious significance to suicide, chose not to tell the family member or the church that we belong to that that's how he died, because they feared that he wouldn't get a proper burial.
That must be really difficult.
It was very difficult for me because I'm educated, I'm a lawyer, and I look at it as just part of the process in life. You know, these things happen, and so for my parents, I, out of respect for them, I didn't want, I kept their secret. But there's a lot of people within our community who would not have attended the funeral, who would have not attended the service. And I think that would have been worse for my parents, because they think already he's committed in their eyes this horrible sin.
How do you talk to them about it? Like,
you know, I just tell my parents that this is, part of the faith, that if, you know, for them, because they're so religious, that, you know, if God didn't want us to take our lives, he would have never put that into our heads. And I think for them, it's an easier way for them to deal with it. But I can't change the way they think. I think as long as they're walking on this planet, I'm going to keep their secret for them. But for me, I think it's something that we need to talk about. My children, who are very young right now, the loss for them is enormous, because I only have the one brother, and I have no other siblings, and they've lost their uncle.
Did you tell them the truth?
I did not. I did tell my children that he had been very ill, and that I needed to differentiate having, you know, a heart problem or having a cold, because if they think if I'm sick, I'm going to die. So I had to differentiate that his illness was so great that he couldn't look after himself.
Scott Chisholm, do you want to say something to Anne or pick up on one of her thoughts?
Well, I think a lot of the stigma when it comes to family and religion, I mean, we're all so different. I mean, the town that I grew up in, it was a predominantly Catholic town. And as a 16-year-old, I didn't understand the religious component to it, and I didn't look at it too closely as I grew older. I did. But one thing that I really, really remember is that the funeral was in a Catholic church. And one thing I know, that it was far, far beyond standing room only. So the beliefs versus who the person was were two totally different things.
Mm-hmm. Anne, thank you for calling and sharing your family story with us.
Bye-bye.
That's Anne in Brampton. Let's go to North Bay next. Liza is joining us. Hello, Liza.
Hi.
So we're talking about why it's important to talk about suicide. Can you tell us what this means to you?
Well, it's been hugely significant in my family. I was 16 when my 16-year-old cousin committed suicide, and we were like, you know, he was like my brother, and it was awful at the time because the older generation didn't talk about it. We certainly knew that it was suicide, but nobody said anything about it. And then gradually over time after that, we started finding out that our grandmother had committed suicide when she was in her 40s. That was sort of back in the 30s, and my father had found the body, but it had never been talked about. And then as we sort of, fortunately, I come from a very large extended family, and my cousins and I started sort of comparing stories, and we found out, in fact, there's an incredibly strong family history of mental health and depression problems. And thank God we have been able to talk about it, because it turns out that a large proportion of us have sought treatment for depression. And it was interesting, at last Christmas, we had a big Boxing Day party, and there were more than 40 of us there. And, you know, we were talking about it. It was a general topic of conversation, and who was on antidepressants, and who was having great luck with their therapists and so on. And I was thinking, wow, what an incredible legacy for my grandmother to have left behind, that all her grandchildren still got together at Christmas, and we're still so close. And thank God we're able to deal with it. So it's just one of those family things now.
Mm-hmm. So you sort of made a transition from the years of... Do you have any understanding or insight into why your own dad, you know, you never heard that story before?
Well, he was a doctor. And yeah, there was huge shame. And in fact, his last remaining sister just died a couple of months ago, and she was well into her 80s. And when she was, you know, sort of within a couple of weeks of her death, she was talking to my cousin, who was her daughter, and said, you know, my mother killed herself when she was 13. I've never spoken to anybody about this my entire life.
Hmm.
So it was very sad. But on the other hand, you know, her children had very fulfilled lives. It's just such a sad thing to have had for them to have carried around with them all this time.
Does it get lighter when you talk about it?
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and as I say, we've been really fortunate. I myself... sort of, that was one of the reasons that I sought treatment for depression about 10 years ago. And yeah, you know, you still run into stigma from time to time, but I very much regard it as the same as having, you know, a tendency towards sunburn or something like that. It's just one of those things you deal with.
Liza, thank you for your call as well.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
That's Liza in North Bay. We're asking, why is it important to talk about suicide? You can tell us your story. We're taking calls at 1-888-817-8995. Let's go to Kate in Mississauga. Hello, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, go right ahead.
Good. Well, unfortunately, I was trying to listen to the program, but then your person came on, so I didn't really get to hear much of it apart from just what the last person was saying, which I liked what she said about...
You tell me your story, Kate.
Okay, well, just about depression being like sunburn. My sister was 21 when she died. I was 13,
mm-hmm.
and she and I were exceptionally close. Fortunately, I had two older siblings, but of course, at that age, they were away from the house and had been. So it was... you can imagine, very, very traumatizing for me and for everybody. And I guess the difficult issue was having, it could have been me that had found her at home hanging. And I'm fortunate that it wasn't me, but unfortunately it was my mother. So, you know, you never get rid of that sort of grief and pain. But the whole idea of talking about it, not talking about it. I mean, I have always talked about it. Maybe it's because of my age. Certainly, absolutely, you know, adults, it's shame. It's you know, oh my God, what kind of parent were you? This sort of thing. But I guess my bottom thing now is that I've known women in their 40s this year. My sister would have been in her late 40s, who have struggled with depression and have killed themselves now. And I guess part of my feeling is that, unfortunately, even with all this treatment and trying to be aware, I always believed that had my sister not died when she was 21, she probably would have done it, leaving a family at the age of 40, whatever, because there's just not the awareness, the treatment, the support. And I have an extremely supportive family.
So in your own family, even today, just Does your family talk about your sister's suicide?
We do. We do. My brother, not as much. My sister and I do. Unfortunately, both my parents are deceased.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that this contributed, you know, the pain contributed to their, I would say, earlier demise.
Did your mom ever really open up about
it?
Yes, she did.
Before my father died, I basically forced him to talk about it because he was a prominent lawyer in Toronto. And everybody was extremely supportive at his firm. But you just don't talk about it.
Yeah, Scott Chisholm, that theme keeps coming up, the idea of people keeping it closed in. You know, my father is a lawyer, or previous caller, a doctor. So that's secrecy, eh?
Yeah. Well, I think, too, I mean, a lot of what we're talking about is this stigma and secrecy. And I think one of the things, and when I look back, one of the examples I have is with my high school teachers at the time. It seemed to me they didn't want to talk about it, but at the same time, when I look back on it, and it was the way I felt then about them, is that it wasn't out of a negative way. It was because I was like this fine piece of china, and they were really, really afraid to break it and make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so sometimes the stigma gets worse because it's easier to sometimes or it's safer to say nothing. People believe that, and I think that's one of the things about the book is, let's talk about it, that it does get better if we can talk.
Well, and it's also about if it hasn't happened to you, you feel awkward. I mean, it's like when someone has a terminal illness, you want them to open the door and allow you to ask a question sometimes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you have to lay the groundwork, so to speak. Let's take some other callers. Mary's on the line with us in Toronto. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi. So we're talking about why it's important to talk about suicide. How do you understand this?
From a personal perspective, I'm 43 now, and since I was a child, I was suicidal. There was history of depression in the family, which was never acknowledged or even really known about. Tomorrow is the anniversary of my aunt having committed suicide. She's been gone 5 years. My uncle committed suicide 15 years ago, and his mother committed suicide. My mother attempted suicide many, many times over the years when I was a child. And my grandmother attempted suicide when I was 11. And it was my grandfather and I that witnessed it. And, he asked me never to speak about it. And I never did. But it was scary to see it happening, although, we stopped her. And
how old were you at that time, Mary?
I was 11 when my grandmother attempted. And when I was young and my mother would go to the hospital and they would, pump her or whatever means she had tried to, it got to the point where for me, and I was 8, 9, 10, 11, that I was embarrassed because it didn't seem like the doctors took it seriously and they would just let her go.
So did you talk about it as a child? Did you tell a friend?
No, absolutely never. Now, there's sort of a hidden blessing in my aunt's passing because I had to look at it and what can I learn from this? And because it is sudden and it's taught me that suicide is, there's no going back. I look at the way my different family members, have responded to it. And for me, at one point, I thought because I held her in such high regard that it gave me permission to take suicide as an option because if she could do it, so can I. And then at the other spectrum, it encouraged my life, for me to live my life differently and more fully and very carefully because there is a history of depression in my family. Her daughters, my cousins and I, we've come together and we're taking our own, depression more seriously.
Let me ask you, Mary, I want to ask you because there's a theme here, certainly families where they're seeing patterns. Do you think you would have called 5 years ago and joined a discussion like this?
No. Well, I'm 43. I don't know if it comes with age. But I know and I'm glad that it's being more talked about, but there's definitely that stigmatization. At the funeral, people thought she had a heart attack, and it wasn't mentioned that she had ended her life. certain members of my family still think she had a heart attack, and that's why I'm not using my real name today. And that's unfortunate, because I'm a person that wants to talk about it, because I want people to see that we don't have to be afraid. We don't have to be ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also want to clear the air, because if we don't talk about it, people have their own ideas. Some people, they blame themselves. Some people question why. And many people say, how could she do this to whoever she left behind? And as a person who has thought about and written about suicide over the years myself, in my journals, I always thought, you know, you're not living my life, so you can't know what I'm going through. So how can you then? Because my aunt always said to me, she said, but you know, you better never end your life, because it will destroy, you know, those that you love, that love you. And here she did it.
Yeah. Mary, I want to hold you there only because we have many other callers, but thank you for calling as well, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Bye-bye. We are asking you about why it is important to talk about suicide, and we're going to go next to Peterborough. Martha is on the line. Hello, Martha.
Hi.
Hi. So tell us about why this is something that's close to you.
Well, I'm a nurse, and so I was actually recently, like last year, 2 years ago, I did a suicide intervention workshop. And one of the things they asked us to do was write down how we'd been affected by suicide. Had we dealt with somebody on a professional level or family, what that kind of stuff. And it was quite alarming that when I started writing down people I knew that had committed suicide, I came up with 12 people, and only one of those people was on a professional level.
Wow.
So 11 people, and that's a couple of family members, not immediate family members, but family members,
mm-hmm.
and mostly friends that had died from suicide. And I think when I was younger, I very much grew up with those stigmas of mental illness and the veil of secrecy around suicide. And it was, you know, it's something you don't talk about. And no, they didn't commit suicide. It was an accident, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now as a healthcare professional, I have a much greater understanding of suicide and the impact that it leaves behind and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's so important that we discuss suicide openly, because the more we allow ourselves to speak about suicide openly, the more education is out there and the more people, the stigma falls away, so that when people do commit suicide, there isn't that veil of secrecy can be lifted and people can find help, help for the person who's contemplating suicide, and help for those people that are left behind in the aftermath.
Yeah, because it certainly adds another aspect to that secrecy. Scott Chisholm, you probably relate in some ways to another healthcare professional.
Well, I think it's amazing how Martha talks about the prevalence, and that's one of the things. And prevalence, it sort of comes up, you know, like I said earlier, I don't have numbers, but what I do know is, even through this project, because some of us tied to the project, having conversations with others, and in those conversations, people say, oh, yeah, you know, my brother in high school, well, it really wasn't an accident. It was a suicide, and they would talk about it. And they've never really had the opportunity, given the opportunity to have a dialogue on it. And just by bringing this out, it all of a sudden gets them talking and allowed them to get something out that they never had before. So
mm-hmm.
I think getting this out is so, so important, and putting faces to it.
Again, and which is your idea of the book, obviously, with the photo essays to see. Do you feel like collateral damage? I mean, that's the name of your book.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I got an email from my sister the other night, and she challenged the word damage in it.
Okay.
But it certainly is, and it's not. I think in life, I see my life. I'm 44, and it continues to. I mean, it's one of the things that my wife has said to me is that I am who I am today because, in a big part, because of what my father did. We are what happens to us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really sometimes awkward looking at the silver lining, but it's certainly there. I mean, it's who I am. That's okay. And I want survivors. I want people to be able to be okay and move forward and create a dialogue. And so whether it's dealing with somebody who's dealing with somebody else's suicide today, I just think it's going to help.
Let's take another caller. Ben is on the line with us in Mississippi Mills. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Hi. So why is it important to talk about suicide?
Well, I think it's important so that we can get rid of some of the stigma associated with it. And I found that that the thing we did here was very useful and helpful in doing that. We formed the Jenny James Depression Research Fund, hosted by the Royal Ottawa Foundation for Mental Health and the University of Ottawa Institute for Mental Health Research.
Ben, what was the story behind that?
And the story was a daughter, a high-achieving daughter in the academic and professional field, took her own life here about 3 years ago. She was 33 years old.
Oh.
And that led to this us forming this Jenny James Depression Research Fund under the auspices of the Royal Ottawa Hospital and the University of Ottawa Mental Health Research Organization. And part of that, of course, was targeted at improving depression diagnosis and treatments leading to the reduction of deaths due to suicide and the stigma associated with suicide.
Was it difficult, Ben, for you to...
Well, certainly it was difficult, but I think that this, having done this and worked with the great people in this organization and all their support, I think was very useful and helpful to us all, and hopefully useful and helpful to others that would fall into the same problems as our family has fallen into here.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice that you put her name on that.
Well,
yeah.
And if anybody wanted to get more information here, I have a website here too that would be, they'd be more than helpful if anybody wanted to contact them.
Go ahead. You can tell us what it is.
www.rohcg.on.ca.
Okay, Ben. Thank you very much for your call as well.
And I certainly hope that your discussion this afternoon will be helpful.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, bye.
That's Ben in Mississippi Mills talking about a scholarship set up in his daughter's name. I think we have time for a couple of other callers. Deborah joining us on the line in Ottawa. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how do you relate to this subject about why it's important to open up, talk about suicide?
Well, I'll just say my history was losing my father 16 years ago
mm-hmm.
to suicide. That's the first suicide I experienced close to me, and I was very fortunate to be 12 days later in a group in Ottawa. I'm from Ottawa. That was put together by Bereaved Families of Ontario, the Ottawa region, and it's a Lost by Suicide group. And in that group, we had the opportunity to speak about what our experience was, what we were feeling and what we were going through. And any family members who were, both my mother and I went through this, and it was really our lifeline for the next year.
Did you ever feel like you couldn't talk about what happened with people?
No, we did. Everybody knew. We told everybody. It was very open at the funeral. We spoke about it all the time. Our experience was, and it was mentioned earlier, how it's often that people don't ask or talk about it with you because they're afraid of what mm-hmm. to say. They're afraid that it's going to create more pain. And our own experience was that it was actually very healing to speak about it.
And it was obviously a deliberate choice for the family, right?
Deliberate choice. And in fact, we could see when people weren't talking about it, people we hadn't seen since before the death, and let's say 6 months had passed, and they were people that didn't live in this area, and they wouldn't say anything. It was the elephant in the room, and we would have to bring it up, and we made it our mission to bring it up because people always wanted to know. In their minds, they had all kinds of things and thoughts going on, and they just really wanted some clarification, understanding, to know if we knew anything,
okay.
what we'd learned. So,
Deborah, thank you very much for your call as well. We're almost out of time. I think we have enough time just to bring in Scott from Guelph for just a few moments here. Scott, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Rita. I just like to briefly discuss the perspective of a friend rather than a family member who has experienced passing of someone close. And the scenario I'd just like to briefly open up to you is I remember the funeral. It was about 27 years ago, a high school buddy, and there was hundreds of students and staff there. And I remember I was the only one who broke down and cried. And I look back at that now, and I just think how surreal that is.
That people were somehow not connected or not, what was going on? Why do you think you were the only one who cried?
I don't know. I the only thing I can think of is that even 27 years ago, there must have been some sort of stigma whereby people just didn't feel comfortable or felt vulnerable to show their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think if there's any place that you would want to express yourself emotionally, that being crying or what have you, it would be with close friends at a funeral.
That's right, and you're talking about something now 27 years ago. I want to thank you all for calling in and joining this discussion. If you're still on the line or thinking about telling your story, you can reach us at TalkBack 1-888-591-4111 or send us a few lines to OntarioToday@cbc.ca. Scott Chisholm, thanks to you too for starting this conversation.
Thank you very much, Rita.
Scott Chisholm is a firefighter in Thunder Bay. He is putting together a book called Collateral Damage, Images of Those Left Behind by Suicide. You can find out more at www.leftbehindbysuicide.org. Thanks again for your company. We'll talk again tomorrow. Take care. Bye for now.